Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 418 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing good, Joe. How about you, my man?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm getting over a little bit of an illness that I picked up last Friday. It seemed to get pretty bad around those times. Feeling a lot better now, but the weekend was rough. But my voice is a little bit different, I think. But anyway, we're going to soldier through. Let's start with the review part of the show. We're going to start here at the Rudolf Weber Arena in Oberhausen in Germany over here. Three fights to mention. Mike Perez with a TKO in the very first round. He's now 29-3 with a draw. That TKO came against Rashad Karimov, who's now 36-4. Austin Trout, friend of the show, no doubt. Trout now 37-5 with a draw. Unanimous decision over 8 rounds against Omir Rodriguez, now 13-10 with a draw. And the main event was Milan Pratt, who's now 20-1. He lost his O. He was TKO'd by the undefeated Polish fighter Slawa Spoma, who's now 19-0, a TKO in round 10 for the WBA Intercontinental and WBO Global Super Welterweight titles. Moving now to the Poliforum Zamna Merida in Yucatan in Mexico. This one was live on DAZN over here. An undefeated fighter called Angel Ayala Lardizabal. He was 16-0. You know, a lot of people saw what he was doing since turning pro, ticking all the boxes, looking like a guy for the future for sure at flyweight. Got in there with Felix Alvarado, though, who, as we know, is extremely, extremely tough and was going to be a really big fight, you know, a really big step up, a really big acid test, if you like. But yeah, anyways, back to what I was saying. It was going to be a tough, tough fight, etc. And yeah, he managed to somehow escape with the points decision after 10 rounds. I think it was 10 rounds. Lardizabal now 17-0. Alvarado had Lardizabal down in the early rounds. He should be 40-3. He was a 2-1 underdog, the experienced Alvarado. But a lot of people felt that, you know, Lardizabal managed to get the hometown decision against Alvarado. Really good fight, though, while it lasted. Lardizabal did certainly win a bunch of rounds, you know, in the middle of the fight. But Alvarado closed the show quite strong as well. So, really good fight while it lasted. And Alvarado certainly not done. But yeah, 95% of people feeling like he deserved the decision. Also on that card, the return to the ring for Miguel Burchell. He was coming off 2 back-to-back stoppage defeats. He's now 39-3. He was able to get a stoppage win. A second round retirement. Diego Ruiz decided not to come out for round 3. Quite surprised with that from Burchell, because, you know, Diego Ruiz is quite a durable guy. I think he'd only been stopped once in 7 losses. He's now 24-8 with a draw. He's been stopped for the second time. Moving now to the Manchester Arena in Lancashire, United Kingdom, over here again, live on DAZN pay-per-view. Just one fight to mention, it's the main event. KSI now 1-1, Tommy Fury now 10-0 as a pro. Unanimous decision over 6 rounds. The judge, Rafael Ramos, incorrectly added up his card to be 57-57, which, you know, ended up being a majority decision for Tommy Fury, but on closer inspection, they added it back up and realized it was actually unanimous for Tommy Fury. Fury had a point deducted, I believe, in round two. I don't know if you saw this fight, Eddie, but if you did, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I actually ended up watching it, but to be honest, couldn't make much of it. To be really quite honest, it was just, I don't know what KSI was trying to do or what he was trying to prove. Fighting with his hands down the whole time, and he would launch like one big right hand here, one big right hand there, and then we'd get into a clinch. And then Tommy would, you know, he was trying to work on the inside. It just, it's hard for me to even say. I mean, I would have, figured Tommy won based on, just some of the activity, I guess. I don't even know, man. These are the kind of fights that people wouldn't want to see when you talk about these YouTubers. When you think about these type of things, and even Tommy as actual professional fighter, I don't know if you can blame him for what was going on, because he's not super duper experienced. You know what I mean? Doesn't have a crazy pedigree as a professional fighter, nor does he as an amateur. So I mean, you know, fighting a guy who's really unorthodox and wild and just going to do something to make the fight ugly, which I would recommend, honestly, for KSI, just to stay in the fight and not put himself in position to get knocked out. But it's just bad to watch. It just really, it frustrates you to watch. You know, at one point, Tommy got a point for, you know, hitting behind the head, and KSI was warm for holding. I mean, it's just like, it just got to be a little ridiculous after a while. You know what I mean? To give Tommy the decision, I don't know whether it was justified or not. I mean, I would have probably given him the decision just based off of what KSI was trying to do and how, I guess, unsuccessful he was with it. But I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I wouldn't even call that, complete boxing. I don't know, man. It was just kind of frustrating to watch at times. So, but I finished it. I watched it. I actually watched the fight. I even watched the fight with Logan Paul and was it Dylan Danis, I think his name is.
Yeah.
And that was, was named Dylan Danis, was just basically trying to make a big, shit show of it and trying to walk him down and just catch shots upside the head, and it just kind of was a little ridiculous, honestly, in my opinion. Those two fights just weren't good. You know what I mean? I don't think if that's gonna be, this is why I give Jake Paul a little more respect, because he seems to be a little more serious about what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? He's actually trying to be a decent fighter. So but seeing these other two fights, I just didn't really like what I saw. To be honest, I'm not, Logan Paul was, controlling the fight easily by just, throwing punches, keeping his hands out. But like I said, there's just not much you can take from it. You know what I mean? And I'm giving this a little bit too much time, to be honest, but, I don't know. And that's what I thought. What do you think about it, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was what it was. It wasn't a great look for boxing. A lot of people, were giving KSI a chance, and you think before the fight, like, you guys are crazy. He's going to get knocked out. He's going to lose easy. But then those same people come back after the fight like, oh, it was really close. Oh, KSI deserved to win. And I found myself a little bit speechless. Obviously, he's got that mad style of jumping in and out and doing the star jumps and, a lot of hugging, which was really, really annoying to see, especially when I didn't think Tommy Fury's corner made enough of a big deal about that to the referee. I felt that, I always feel like if a referee takes a point off a fighter, off of one fighter, then there's room for the other fighter to try to do something to get a point took off, to kind of write it out, if you like. And I think there was grounds. As long as there's grounds to moan about something, then you can get a point took off the other way. And I think there was grounds there. I think Tommy Fury's corner should have been going crazy about the holding. I think a point would have been took off. And I felt that during the fight. They needed to be doing that because it was too close to call. I mean, a lot of people kind of, I can't remember how I scored it now, but I think a lot of people were sort of saying that KSI won the first three, Tommy Fury won the second half of the fight, 4, 5, and 6. Some people give in Fury round three as well as 4, 5, and 6. That's how he becomes the winner. All in all, it was just too close. Tommy didn't look great, but again, he was trying to force the fight. You know, I can understand that he had to really go on the front foot looking for KSI at times in that fight. But yeah, it was just, I don't know what to make of it, really. It wasn't a great look for boxing, like I say. You know, I don't know. I can see a rematch happening just because I think Tommy Fury's not going to be able to say no to the money. But at the same time, I wouldn't mind seeing KSI against Jake Paul now. And I don't really, I mean, look, I've said it before, I'm not a massive fan of this YouTube stuff, but I don't mind kind of Jake Paul. And KSI did enough here by going the distance and, you know, causing a few issues with his unorthodox style to where I wouldn't mind seeing him in with Jake Paul, you know. But I don't know. I feel like I'm losing myself a little bit here, but yeah, let's move on. It was what it was. The less said, the better, really. And I'm not even going to talk about that co-main event, which was just absolutely awful. Yeah, so KSI Tommy Fury, did watch it, did get baited in because I just wanted Tommy Fury to smash him into next week, which he didn't do. And I was a little bit disappointed. Two of my nephews actually went to the fight. They travelled down on the train, you know, from London to Manchester. And, you know, they're only young, you know what I'm saying? So they were really excited, like they're YouTube fans and stuff like that. And they were really excited for the fight. And then, yeah, afterwards, they were kind of asking to me, like, you know so much about boxing. Well, why didn't Tommy Fury smash him to pieces like you were saying was going to happen? And I honestly don't know what to say. But anyway, let's move on. Let's go to the more serious stuff. At the Fort Bend Epicenter in Rosenberg, Texas. This one was live on Sky Sports. It was live on ESPN in the US. Keyshawn Davis with a win. He's now 10-0, a majority decision, which was a bit questionable. I thought he won it quite clearly unanimously, but anyway, one judge didn't think so. Majority decision over 10 rounds for the WBC USA and WBO Intercontinental Lightweight titles. He got in there with Nahir Albright, who's now 16-3, still never been stopped. I said it, you know, this fight's going to go long. Keyshawn Davis has seemingly gone long in the last few fights in a row. There was a point where I thought he potentially could get the stoppage. I think it was late on. He really hurt Albright, but failed to really capitalize on it. I think, you know, they're moving him quite cleverly. I've said it before. They're not throwing him in with gimme, you know, like guys that he's just going to blow out. I think he could have easily gone that route, blowing out a load of, you know, cab drivers, but they're throwing him in with quite tough guys. And unfortunately, a lot of the fans get impatient with that. You know, I think, be patient. The guy's learning. The guy's getting better and better. But I'm seeing a lot of people saying that, you know, Keyshawn's got something missing. If you actually look, he's only having these fights where people are not that impressed when it's against a guy who's extremely durable, man. So I think we need to cut him some slack. Still think he's a good fighter with a really bright future. And also on the undercard, we should mention as well, Guido Vianello with a win, now 11-1 with a draw. But he failed to get the knockout against Curtis Harper, who's now 14-10. It was an 8-round unanimous decision for Vianello. Yeah, a really bad fight, actually. I didn't think Vianello looked too good. Obviously, he was coming off a loss himself last time out. Curtis Harper did what he does. He's a bit of a spoiler. Came in there, you know, soaked up some big shots. But then, I think at some point, in the last few rounds, he seemed like he thought, oh, there was a bit of belief there. He thought, oh, and I think there was one of the rounds where he seemed to hurt Vianello quite bad in the last few seconds, but he didn't get enough time to follow up on it. But that seemed to give him an injection of energy, Curtis Harper, to finish the fight quite strong. And he tried to definitely knock Vianello out in the last couple of rounds. Yeah, so not very convincing from Vianello once again. I think we've seen him get a little bit exposed now in a couple of fights. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be as great as we all maybe first thought, but it's another win. Curtis Harper is tougher than he sometimes gets credit for. Don't really know what else to say on it. You know, he banks the rounds, usually gets the knockout. Maybe it will do him good going 8 rounds with someone like Curtis Harper. Also on the card, a man that does not mess around when it comes to banking rounds, Richard Torres, now 7-0, another TKO. This time it was in round 2 against Tyrell Anthony Herndon, who's now 21-5. Torres tried to get the first round KO like he always does, and got took into round 2. Yeah. I think Herndon was a bit annoyed with the stoppage. Thought he could have been given a bit more of a chance. But yeah, Torres just steamrolled him like he does, to be honest with you. Massive puncher, can punch with both hands. Very exciting. And I can't wait to see him out once again. Also on the card, Giovanni Marquez, the son of Raul Marquez. He's now 7-0. A TKO for him in round 2 against Dante Strayhorn, who's now 12-5 with a draw. And the main event, Janibek Alimkanouli, now 15-0, a TKO for him in round 6 against Vincenzo Gualtieri in what was a unification for the IBF and WBO middleweight world titles. Gualtieri loses his world title. He's now 21-1 with a draw. Alimkanouli started the fight quite aggressively, as we've seen many, many times with him. I think Gualtieri, in his game plan, was trying to get through a few early rounds and then try to come on a bit strong late on, I think. He seemed like he didn't want to really commit to too much early on for me. I thought that it was going to plan. A lot of people were looking at it going, wow, he's out of his depth. Wow, Alimkanouli's all over him. Wow, the stoppage is going to be coming. But I was thinking, Gualtieri does seem like he's in control of himself here. He seemed like he was fighting within himself. Like I say, wasn't really letting his hands go with much power at all. But to me, it seemed like he knew what was going on. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he was overawed by the occasion. It seemed to me like he was getting on to something. But yeah, in the end, he didn't get going. And he did end up getting stopped in that 6th round. I don't think we got to see, you know, I don't think he left it all in the ring at all. I think whatever he was planning on doing, I think he was maybe going to unleash something a little bit later on. But yeah, I don't think it was like, I don't know, I didn't really perceive it like some people did, where it was just like he was out of his depth. It was a one-sided beatdown. I didn't really see it like that. I feel like he was in some sort of control. Not winning the rounds, it's a hard thing for me to explain, but from my eyes, I just felt like Gualtieri was fighting to tactics, fighting to a game plan, you know, like I say, not wanting to overcommit at all, maybe wear Alimkanouli out a little bit, I don't know, but it didn't end up coming to plan for him in the end, like I say, end up getting stopped, and yeah, the final card to mention went down at the Gold Coast Convention Centre in Broad Beach, Queensland, Australia. Over here we saw Sam Goodman move to 16-0, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds against the very tough Miguel Flores, friend of the show, now 25-5 with a draw. And the main event, Tim Sue, now 24-0. Brian Mendoza in the other corner, now 22-3. It was for the WBO World Super Welterweight title. I don't know if you saw any of this, Eddie. If you didn't, maybe stay muted. But yeah, Tim Sue with a really mature performance. Started the fight, I wouldn't say aggressively, but came out, showed respect to Mendoza. Mendoza picked up a couple of early rounds. It was quite close by the midway point. Some people, I think, even had Mendoza ahead at the midway point. But, you know, as the fight went on, Tim Tzu found another couple gears, and you know, he took control of the fight, really. He took control of the fight, landed some big shots on Mendoza, who, to his credit, took them. There's no doubt in this guy's chin at all. Still never been stopped. But yeah, Tim Tzu found that energy late on and managed to pull away. And I think it was quite an easy fight to score, really, in the grand scheme of things. It was quite clear to see Tim Tzu won this fight unanimously. And he ticks another bunch of boxes, really. This is a guy who's been a bit of a danger man, a big puncher. Tim Tzu answered a few questions here. You know, he's durable. He's obviously fit. He can go through the gears with different guys in front of him with different styles. And yeah, he's world champion already. You know what I'm saying? But this guy's future is very, very bright. And this was another victory for him in which he, you know, proved how good he is and what he's all about. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former WBO Super Bantamweight World Champion. It is, of course, Mr. Isaac Dogbe. Isaac, welcome back on the show, my bro.
Thank you so much, Joey.
Always been well. Yeah. No, always a pleasure having you on. I've been well. But when we got on the phone, I become even more well. So it's fantastic to have you back on, Isaac.
It's fun, good.
We thank God. So, Isaac, we last spoke back in February. At that time, you were getting ready to fight Rabisi Ramirez. Just briefly about that fight. You managed to hit Ramirez with some brilliant shots, by the way. But ultimately, was he perhaps a little bit better than you thought?
You know what, yeah. I'm not one to kind of like make excuses or whatnot, right? You know, first and foremost, I thank God Almighty for the opportunities that He continues to give me, and also, you know, for the gifts of life and everything else that comes with it. Listen, he was a better man on the night, you know, just to simply put it. I know I could have done more, but unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. But hey, it's just one of those things, and I've had to go back to the drawing board to, you know, to learn and, you know, take things to a different level.
Well, then, yeah, on to the next one. It's a fight back home, Isaac, back in the UK. November 18th at the Manchester Arena, you'll be boxing the undefeated Nick Ball. Have you watched much of Nick, Isaac? Have you seen much of him?
Yes. When his name was brought to the table, I had to go and see who he was and, you know, just check him out a bit. And yeah, I think I've seen enough.
And everyone I've seen give an opinion on this fight, they all think it's going to be a war. Are you expecting a war? And if it is to be a war, does that play into your hands or his?
Well, when you speak of war, they say there has to be a war until there's peace. You know, we don't get peace until there's war, so... whichever way it goes, for me, I do believe that by God's special grace, whichever way is going to go in my favor, you know, because I've been there, I've seen it all, I've hit the canvas, I've gotten back up, you know, I've been through wars and everything else. So, it wouldn't be nothing new. You know, the only thing I'm expecting is that, you know, I come very prepared on the night. And by God's special grace, you know, I take home the victory.
And it's interesting you say that, because obviously you have been in quite a few wars. I think no one can take away your toughness. We've seen it so many times in the ring. That's the one thing we haven't yet seen from Nick Ball. I've seen him throw a million hooks, you know, and bang people out of there, but I've never actually seen him in the deep end. And I feel like you've been in the deep end many times. We've seen you can swim there. This will be his acid test. Since moving from super bantam to featherweight, you've had to give away height advantages every fight. This is one of the main reasons I wasn't too happy when you moved to featherweight. It looked like you're never going to be the taller man in a fight ever again. However, you're going to be the taller man come November 18th. How big of an advantage is that to you, Isaac? Because you've been having to deal with taller guys every time.
Look, you know what they say. When life throws lemons at you, what do? You make lemonade out of it. And for me, I keep saying this all the time and time again, is that I'm not the one that's fighting. I'm not the one that's fighting. You know what I mean? I believe there's a spirit of the Lord that leads me into the battle and it leads me to the ring and fights all my battles for me. So when I'm thrown against these guys at the featherweight division and, you know, they are bigger guys, taller guys and everything and stuff, I don't really feel any different, you know. The only thing is that I know that at the end of the night, I'm going to come out victorious. And the days that I do not come out victorious, you know, I trust that God has a better plan for me. You know, in regards to Nick Ball, who's coming in as a smaller guy, I think it's all about adjustment, really and truly. It's all about adjustment because before I'm having to like stand tall, you know, to kind of like accommodate the style of the fight and everything else and stuff like that. But now, you know, we have to adjust as we're going along. And by God's grace, we'll see how everything, you know, everything works out on the night. Because it's all about things coming together, everything coming together on the night.
And is there any pressure on you in this fight? I mean, obviously, you're the underdog. And I think that's interesting, by the way, that you're the underdog. But usually the underdog doesn't really have the pressure on them. But I think there's maybe a lot on the line for you, actually. This is a bit of a must-win fight, in my opinion, for you. Is that fair to say, Isaac?
Every fight is a must-win fight for me, you know? I don't go in a fight thinking that, when I win... if I do not win, then this is going to happen, or when I win, that's going to happen. Every fight is a must-win for me, and that's how I've always approached all the fights. I don't go in a fight expecting to be the, expecting that, this is going to be an easy fight for me, whether it comes close or not, they're going to give it to me because my name is Isaac Dogbe, or because I'm the nicest guy that you come across. Now, every fight is a must-win, and this one, This is no different from all the other fights that I've been in.
And you've only boxed as a pro in the UK just one time. It was Northern Ireland back in 2014. Are you excited to be boxing back in the UK here?
Man, listen, I am ecstatic, honestly. When I got a call and, you know, I had other options to go away because obviously I was just like, oh, wow, you know, this, you know, we've been talking about fighting in the UK for the longest time, almost 10 years now, if my calculations are right. And finally, the opportunity has come, you know, thanks to God and thanks to the people who are putting the show together, you know, Queensbury and to my other associates, Top Rank, you know, so... I'm excited about it. You know, it'll be great to fight on the UK soil, and also to fight, you know, before the UK fight then.
And is it perhaps a sign of things to come, maybe fighting again here in the UK, the fact that you're willing to work with all promoters? Do you think this could be a sign we might see you back again after this?
Most definitely, by God's special grace, you know. I mean, like, I've really been wanting to fight in the UK for the longest time. Like I said earlier, I fought around the world, you know. I fought around some really, really nice places, in terms of Ghana, America, New Zealand, Switzerland, and all these places. So, listen, I'm always up for a challenge. I'm always up for a good time. I'm always up for, you know, new adventures and new opportunities. And I mean, right now, I'm thankful to God that these things are popping up, and, you know, you know, it would be great. You know, I'm very, very grateful, man.
And talking of coming back to the UK, I'm going to throw two names at you that definitely would get you back over here, but they fought each other a few weeks ago. Lee Wood, Josh Warrington. Did you see the fight? And if so, what did you make of it?
I saw the fight. Wow. You know, I've asked to fight both guys on numerous occasions. And I was told that, you know, their promoters had a different engagement for them. So I should wait, you know. And I did wait my turn. And, of course, these two guys are great fighters. I love how they fight. The fight was great. Listen, I would love a scrap with Josh Warrington. I think that would make a lot of headlines, honestly. But listen, I can't oversee what's in front of me and jump into something different right now. I've got to take care of business right now and then look onto what is to happen in the near future. But these are two guys that I would love to fight because, listen, they are also considered some of the best fighters to come out of the UK. And, you know, it would be great to meet up with them. Because, listen, essentially, when history is being told, they are going to say that, well, this person fought that person and it was a great fight. That person fought this person, it was a great fight. You know, it's all about the excitement. It's all about everything. You know, just putting yourself out there and, you know, fighting the best. And that's what boxing has been for me, to fight the best and essentially to reap the rewards that come with it. And, you know, yeah, so I'm ready for all of them. Honestly, I thought Warrington was leading at that point until he got stopped, you know. But it just goes to show that, man, listen, this is boxing. Anything can change at any time. And, I mean, Lee Wood deserves it. He's a champ, and he deserves everything good that comes with that victory. And I wish him well. I hope that, you know, they would also welcome me a fight with either of them.
Yeah, hopefully we see it down the line. I want to throw even Michael Conlan's name out there. Obviously, there's a fight that's supposed to happen before. I would still like to see that even in 2024. Just before we let you go, Isaac, I always like to do this. I like to come to you for some closing words to the listeners. And you don't sign out your interviews the same way as everyone else does. A thank you, you know, thanks to my sponsors. No, no, no. You always give us pearls of wisdom that we remember forever. Please, if you have anything right now on the tip of your tongue, let's hear it. Bless our ears, please, Isaac.
Oh, thank you, Joey. I would love to say thank you to my sponsors. You said, I feel this is different now. But I mean, listen, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, Joey. You know, you were also one of the people that were there, you know, from the beginning as well. And it's always been great, you know, to always connect with you guys, you know, and also to have me on your platform. But, you know, this one thing I would love to say before I leave is that they say that everyone in their lifetime has to climb a mountain before they reach a level ground, right? And why do I say that? It means that the beginning of everything is challenging, do you know what I mean? But if you do not climb up that stairs or up that mountain, go through that challenge or that difficulty, you know, how are you supposed to reach the top of the mountain where the level is grounded? Do you know what I mean? Where it is leveled? You know, and this is just an encouragement to everyone out there that at any particular moment in time, they will come to a time where you're gonna have to climb that mountain, you know, in order to get to where you want to get to reach that level ground that you want to get to. And even when you do get there, in order for you to move up onto the next step, you're gonna have to climb another mountain again. Do you know what I mean? So it's just to say that, listen, whatever good that you're doing, keep doing it. whatever struggles you're going through, keep going through them. Whatever challenge you're going to go through, keep going through them. Because in a very short while, you know, you're going to reach that point where you're going to look back down and see how far you climbed, and you're going to be proud of yourself, and you're going to know that, oh my goodness, and I thank God that I've achieved what I set out to do. So always keep your head up, man, and the sky is the limit.
There we go. I love it. You know, it's a great way of saying, in other words, Isaac, you know, nothing worth having comes easy, and you can only climb when you're in your prime.
Of course.
And just to
add this one, listen, you know, always have to be thankful to God, because without God, nothing is impossible. You know, with God, all things are possible. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the code I live by.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, Isaac, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, my man. You know that. Thank you for your time. Best of luck November 18th, and we'll speak again sometime after the fight, my man.
All right, mate. Cheers. Thank you, and I hope to see you there, man.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. Going to start with this piece of news here, Eddie. I'm going to come to you straight away. David Benavidez gets in with Demetrius Andrade. It's going to headline a Showtime pay-per-view Saturday, November 25th at the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. I don't want you to go too deep on it, but thoughts?
Great fight. I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, obviously, haven't seen much of Andrade too recently. I mean, he's had so many issues, you know, back and forth with management or whatever, I guess. Hasn't fought that much, but he's fought a few, you know, some fights recently. But I think if he's good, primed and ready, it's an interesting fight. But if he's not where he needs to be, I mean, he could get steamrolled. Because we all know David Benavidez does not play for a second. He's coming in there to destroy, seek and destroy. So, and he's got a great bit of skills as well going on with that aggression. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, there's a lot that Demetrius Andrade has that, you know, he can throw in, but he's got to be on his A game to compete. So, interesting fight. Looking forward to it. Going to be very interesting.
Yep, and the other piece of news is that an injury has forced the postponement of Josh Buatsi against Dan Aziz, which is a real shame for British boxing fans. We were looking forward to it. It was going to go down this weekend at the O2 Arena. The main event of that card has collapsed, obviously. Dan Aziz with the injury, a back injury, which broke earlier this week. Not his back, but the news broke earlier this week. Anyway, the card still goes ahead, but there's been a venue change from the O2 Arena to York Hall now, which we'll get into in a moment. But massive blow there for Boxer and Ben Shalom. A lot of people were really looking forward to that fight. You know, it was going to be a great all domestic dust up, and I was really looking forward to it, to be honest with you. Anyway, moving on to the preview part, we're going to start tomorrow, Friday, October 20th at the Holiday Inn in Birmingham, West Midlands, United Kingdom. There's every chance I've stayed in that hotel. But anyway, on the card, the main fight, the main event, we're going to see Ayaz Ahmed 10-2 with 3 draws. He gets in a rematch with Marcel Braithwaite 15-3-1 for the vacant British super flyweight title. Obviously, the pair boxed in the past, and it ended in a very controversial draw. A lot of people felt Braithwaite won it. He did win it, to be totally honest with you. But yeah, Ahmed was lucky to get a draw. He loves a draw, by the way, Ahmed. And here they get it on again. They were supposed to get it on again sooner than this, but it got pushed back, and here we are. It finally goes down tomorrow. Moving now to Germany at the EWS Arena in Göppingen. Over here, we're going to see Firat Arslan, 54-9 with 3 draws. It's a 12-rounder for the WBA Gold World Cruiserweight title. He gets in with Edin Puhalo, I think it's said. Again, always worth mentioning the legend that is Firat Arslan, simply because he's still trying his absolute best, actually. You know, former cruiserweight world champion, but still trying his absolute best at the ripe old age of 53. So, yeah, all the best to him here. He gets in with this guy who is 35. He's 23-1 with 22 KOs. But the bad thing is he got knocked out by Dylan Pravacic. We've seen Dylan Pravacic come to the UK. Lost to Lawrence Okolie. Lost to Isaac Chamberlain. He's not that great. All the best to Big Firat. Moving now to the York Hall Bethnal Green. This is the rest of the Bouazizi Aziz undercard. We're going to see Louis Green, 16-3, defending his Commonwealth title against Sam Gilley, friend of the show, 16-1. That's over 12 rounds. Sam Gilley is the underdog for this one, so you can get a nice little price on him. I'd love to see him pull it off. I think he can pull it off as well. He's in some good form. All the best to him. We're also going to see Mikel Lawal, 17-0, defending his British Cruiserweight title, if I'm not mistaken. He gets him with Isaac Chamberlain, another really good fight, 15-2. Chamberlain, friend of the show, extremely frustrating career. You know, his two losses have come to Lawrence Okolie and Chris Billam-Smith, two, you know, guys that went on to become world champions, yet he has just struggled so much to get things going. It's been such a, you know, a rough career, really, since the loss to Okolie. Everything's just gone super slow for him. But here, you know, he gets in a big fight. I think he probably saw himself at this point in his career, you know, the year 2023, probably going to be higher than fighting for the British title. But here he is. It's been extremely slow, like I say. He's quite a big favourite against Mikel Lawal. I'll be surprised if he has an easy night with him. But I was quite surprised to see him as the favourite, actually. Also on the card as well, Karis Artingstall, 4-0. It's an 8 2-minute round contest against Vanessa Bradford, who's 7-4-2. Karis Artingstall probably going to go the distance again here, I'd say. She's still yet to get KO number one. And yeah, she gets in with Vanessa Bradford, who's never been stopped. Been in there with some decent fighters as well, you know, Tiara Brown, Michaela Mayer, Alicia Baumgartner, Hayam Michoy, Karis Brown. So yeah, she's been around the block. She has you know, fought some really good ladies in just her short pro career, never been stopped. Also on the card as well, Mick Hennessy Jr., 11-1 with a draw, gets in with late replacement Joe Laws after Harley Benn pulled out the fight. Joe Laws 13-2, it's over 8 rounds there. I think that could be interesting, by the way. Wouldn't be surprised to see Joe Laws get the upset. He's about a 4-1 underdog. I think that's worth a small punt. Moving now to the Echo Arena. Unfortunately, this show clashes with the York Hall card. It's going down on DAZN, this one, of course. Let's start with the undercard. Campbell Hatton, 13-0, gets in with Jamie Sampson, who's 9-2. It's over 8 rounds there at super lightweight. Once again, it's another fight for Campbell Hatton. Is he going to get the knockout? Is he not? And yeah, I think he might get it here. They're expecting him to get it. The thing about Jamie Sampson, I mean, he's never been stopped in his two losses. But when you look a bit closer at his record, he came back with a loss this year. He lost on points over 6 rounds to the undefeated Conor Gray. That was back in June of 2023. His last fight prior to that was back in 2014. So he actually took 9 and a bit years out of the ring. So I'm not sure what has gone on in that time. He didn't put on loads of weight. He came back at pretty much the exact same weight to the pound. But I don't know what he's been up to in all that time off. And, you know, Ricky Hatton's son might just be a bit too fresh for him. We'll have to wait and see. Also on the card as well, the undefeated Khalil Majid. He is 11-0. He's back in an 8-rounder here against Tom Farrell, who's 21-7. Once again, you know, Majid hasn't really fought anyone of note. You know, you look through his record, it's full of guys with losing records. In fact, just one guy on his whole record has got a winning record, and that was last time out. He went to points with this guy who was 9-4. And yeah, basically gets in with Tom Farrell. Tom Farrell's not in the best of form, but again, I wouldn't want to write him off here. He's not, like I say, been in the best of form, lost three of his last four, but I don't think he's a bad fighter at all. I mean, last time out, I was at his fight against Henry Turner, and I was really impressed with Henry Turner, but Henry Turner's absolutely massive. He's a massive puncher, or he looked like a massive puncher. He was big and strong, and Khalil Majid, I don't think he's going to have that same kind of stature, that same kind of power. And for me, I would not be surprised to see this go the distance. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Tom Farrell pull off an upset. I think he's worth a little small punt there. But like I say, I think the fight goes the distance here. Also on the card, we have Shabazz Masood, 11-0. He gets in with Jose San Martin, who's 34-7 with a draw. That's over 10 rounds there. Again, it's a really kind of weird fight. Masood really impressed me, I think, in his last fight against Jack Bateson. Managed to get the stoppage. I was very impressed with that. But yeah, gets in with a very durable guy here. 42 fight veteran from Colombia. Went three rounds with Maurizio Lara, got KO'd back in October of last year. Since then, he's had two fights, a win and a loss. Went 12 rounds, though, with Emmanuel Navarrete back in 2018, got stopped in the 12th and final round. That tells me all I need to know. This guy's obviously going to be pretty tough. Shabazz Masood probably for the points win there. Very impressive boxer, Masood, by the way. All the best to him. Also on the card as well, Peter McGraw, 7-0 in a 10-rounder at super bantamweight against Fran Mendoza. Fran Mendoza, 17-0. Like I say, undefeated. Not a name that I'd heard of. I had a little look at him from Colombia, living in Spain these days. Again, bit of a padded record. Didn't really recognise anyone on his 17 wins. But, you know, you never know with guys like this. It's a massive step up for Peter McGraw, I suppose, in just his 8th fight. He's done 10 rounds one time in the past as well. Fran Mendoza has never done 10. That could be quite interesting. But yeah, Peter McGraw's a good boxer, you know. I'd say he might win this one. It's tough, really. You never know with Colombians. They're tough guys. Could go the distance. I don't know. But it's a weird fight. It doesn't make much sense. No belt on the line. This one's another kind of strangish fight, really. We're going to see Akib Fiaz, 12-0, for the vacant Commonwealth Super Featherweight title over 12 rounds against Reese Bellotti, 16-5. Really, really like this fight because it's just completely a bit of me. A bit mad. A bit unexpected. Akib Fiaz has managed to get himself to 12-0, and to be honest with you, he's been a little bit fortunate, you know. He's been a little bit fortunate. He was down in his last fight against Kostin Ion. He was down there and just about managed to scrape a point, you know, the win by 1 point, 76-75, the scorecard in the end. But, you know, he hasn't looked that good. He was a good amateur, but it seems like it's been a bit of a struggle adapting to the pros. He gets in with Reese Bellotti, who, you know, you can say what you like about the guy. He can certainly punch, though. And I was at his last fight against Yusuf Kamari. He boxed absolutely brilliantly. I should mention as well, both guys have got a victory against Dean Dodge. Both guys stopped him. Reese Bellotti did it quicker. And yeah, that's the only time that Akib Fiaz managed to get a stoppage. It was in the 8th and final round. Yeah, so Fiaz, he's not going to get the respect from Bellotti. Bellotti knows that, you know, the guy can't punch as hard as him. The guy is not going to want to sit there and trade with him. So Bellotti's going to come and put the pressure on. And he's been in these kind of fights before, you know. He's been in with guys who are much better technical boxers than him, and you know, I think he's learned, and I think he's actually got a bit better than what he was. You know, he was coming off at one point 3 losses in a row, you know, Jordan Gill, Francesco Grandelli, and then he went out there to the States. I thought it was in the States, actually. It was in Eddie Hearn's back garden, but lost to Raymond Ford. Looked horrible in that fight there, but come back, took a little break, come back, and he's in some good form now. And he's actually the favourite against Akib Fiaz. But 2-1 for the KO, I think, is really, really overpriced. I think that's interesting. And the main event, Jack Catterall, 27-1 for the WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight title, gets in with Jorge Linares, 47-8. Good to have Jorge back here in the UK. He's really in good form when he comes to the UK. You know, he's been over here before, beat Anthony Crawler twice, beat Kevin Mitchell as well. So yeah, I think he's 3-0 with one KO whenever he's come to the UK. However, he's not in great form. He's coming off three back-to-back-to-back losses, and he gets in with Jack Catterall, who obviously isn't known as the biggest puncher, but he's going to be a lot bigger than Jorge Linares. And Linares as well, I think, has only had one fight at this weight of 140. He's not really suited to it, and he got banged out in a round by Pablo Cesar Cano, and that one was 4.5 years ago now. So a lot of people are expecting Jack Catterall to get him out of there, and of course, if he doesn't hurt him with a punch, there's every chance he's going to cut him. He always ends up getting cut, Jorge. All the best to him though, and all the best to friend of the show, Jack Catterall. It's not the fight I really wanted, but you know, I just feel sorry for Jack Catterall, man. Just give him a world title for free. He deserves it. Moving out now to the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California, USA. Over here, friend of the show, Joseph Jojo Diaz, 33-4 with a draw. He's back in a 10-rounder against Richard Medina, who's 15-1. I've noticed that the odds on this fight have got tighter and tighter and tighter, which is interesting. I'm hoping that Jojo has had a good, you know, training camp. Haven't spoke to him for a little while. Obviously, we had him on, you know, before his last fight, I think it was. Came on the show, opened up about his addiction to alcohol, and it was a really powerful interview that we did, and I really like Jojo a lot. But yeah, gets in with a hungry fighter. The guy's one loss was to Raymond Ford on points. I don't know that much about him other than that, but some people giving him a real chance here. Also on the card, we're going to see for the IBF World Flyweight female title, a 10 2-minute round contest against or between Aralee Musino, who's the champion, 32-3 with two draws. She gets in with the sister of the towering Inferno, Gabriela Fandora, 11-0. She is the favourite. She's expected here to pick up a world title. All the best to her. But yeah, she gets in with a very, very experienced lady, Musino. Only been stopped one time, and that was back in 2011. A bit of a kind of unexpected one when she lost. She got stopped in two rounds to Ava Knight. So yeah, long, long time ago. She's put together 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 wins, I think, in a row. But yeah, she's gonna need some help from above to beat Fandora, Gabriela Fandora, who's looked very, very good since turning pro. And the main event, Alexis Rocha, 23-1. He gets in with Giovanni Santillan, 31-0. It is over 12 rounds for the WBO, NABO welterweight title. Alexis Rocha, the massive favourite. I think I can see why, you know. Rocha has impressed me, really, really impressed me against Blair Cobbs when he knocked him out. That was a year and a half ago now. And he's been very active since then. He's had four fights, man. And, you know, he's won them all, of course, knocked out two of his last two. Gets in with Santillan, who I think I said in his last fight, you know, if he's going to get a big title shot or whatever, then he needs to get it now. You know, I think he's putting a few miles on his clock now, and it's either now or never for him. Obviously, being a welterweight doesn't help because there's too many killers at that weight as well. And yeah, he's got himself to 31-0. He's southpaw. I thought he was signed to Top Rank, but I've noticed he's obviously on this Oscar De La Hoya show. I don't know if he is with Top Rank or not, but I'm pretty sure his last fight was on a Top Rank card. That's why I thought that. Yeah, that's right. He boxed on the George Camboso's Maxi Hughes undercard last time out. I remember watching that fight against Eric Bonet, or Eric Bone, however you say his name. But yeah, Rocha, you know, it's going to be a good fight. It should be a decent fight here. I've noticed that they're both southpaws, actually. But yeah, like I say, I haven't really seen much of Rocha recently, but he really, really impressed me against Blair Cobbs. He beat the hell out of Blair Cobbs, actually. And should be a good one, should be a good one. There should be something big for the winner here as well, because, you know, it's two guys who are, I don't know, somewhere on that long list of contenders, you know, guys that are worthy contenders at 147. And, yeah, the winner should get, hopefully, some kind of bigger fight. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. I thought I'd be coming to you in this part, Eddie, but actually, we've pretty much flown through it quicker than I thought that we would have done. But yeah, that's about that. So in part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news part. We've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 418 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the former WBO Super Bantamweight World Champion, Mr. Isaac Dogbay. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything from myself, though. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.